Let's give a couple more minutes. A couple more minutes, and then we'll start. Script in front of me. Land your stuff. No, I was just saying I don't have a script.
Thank you.
I'm going to get blamed for messing with the mayor's notebook. Okay, let's go ahead. Okay. Mayor's missing in action. Okay. So let's go ahead and convene our 2 o'clock session. I believe we're going to call the roll. Carla?
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and read the title for our 2 o'clock item?
Item 835, Appeal of Northwest District Association against the Historic Landmarks Commission decision to approve the application of Johnson Street Investors II, LLC, and Mill Creek Residential Trust, LLC, for historic design review for two new five-story apartment buildings as a single project at the intersection of Northwest 19th Avenue and Northwest Johnson Street, LU12106944HDZM.
Okay, thank you. We'll start with Catherine. You can walk us through our disclosure requirements and everything else we need to know.
All right, we'll do.
Before we get started.
Good afternoon. Before we begin the hearing today, I have several announcements that I'm required to make by state law and city code. These concern the kind of hearing we're having today, some guidelines for presenting testimony, as well as the order of testimony. Is that better? Okay. Today's hearing is an evidentiary hearing, which means that you may submit new evidence to the council in support of any arguments you make. In terms of guidelines for presenting testimony today, any letters or documents that you wish to become part of the record and that you present as part of your testimony should be given to the council clerk. That way, we'll make sure they become part of the record. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to the council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the council clerk. Second, any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present today must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code that you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to the City Council. Third, you must raise any issue clearly enough to give the Council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you'll be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Fourth, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court to challenge the conditions of approval. In terms of order of testimony, we'll begin with a staff report by Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present the appellant's case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the City Council. The principal opponent, or here the applicant, will then have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the appellant, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. And that concludes the opening announcements I need to read.
Does anyone on the city council have any ex parte contacts that they need to declare?
I do. I had an ex parte contact on Monday, July 16th. I met with both Neighborhood Association representatives and the developer in the meeting to listen to their issues and the compromise solution they developed together. I merely listened and made it clear that I could not make any decisions until this hearing was concluded.
Anybody else?
Mayor, in my office, any contact would have been through staff, and I would be subsequently briefed, but not directly with the commissioner.
Are there any other reasons why any member of the city council can't hear this issue in an impartial manner? Is there anyone that would like to challenge the impartiality of the city council sitting in the room today? All right, then we will begin the process, starting with the staff report, and it'll be for 10 minutes. Hi.
Great.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
Good afternoon. Commissioners, Mayor Adams, President Commissioner Salzman, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Fritz, pleasure to be with you today. I am Tim Herron with the Bureau of Development Services, and I will take less than 10 minutes to walk through my presentation. This is a staff presentation to City Council for Land Use Review 12-106944, Historic Design Review with Modification Request. This is an appeal of a new project at 19th and Northwest 19th and Johnson in the Alphabet Historic District. The zoning code and approval criteria are listed here, as well as the zoning map. The red hatch marks indicate the site. It is actually two parcels. The zoning is RH, which is residential high density, as well as EX, which is central employment. And the entire area of that site is covered by and within the Alphabet Historic District. The community design guidelines and the Alphabet Historic District addendum apply, and we did consider modifications through historic design review. I believe you're all familiar with the Alphabet Historic District. This is the boundary as it's applied over the aerial map. The site is shown here in the two red post-shade areas. Again, it's one site. It's two development proposals. Just quickly, the project land use history, this began as a pre-application conference on August 9th, 2011. Subsequently, there were two design advice request meetings, one in October and one in November. Design advice request meetings, if you weren't aware, are voluntary meetings by development proposals before the review body to go over basic aspects of a proposal. As a result of that DAR, the project went through some changes. The formal proposal was submitted in January 2012, following which in April and May 14th, it was heard before the Historic Landmarks Commission. As mentioned, there were substantial changes to the project. Notably, it was reduced from 6 floors to 5 floors dealing with its bulk and mass in the historic district, as well as several facade changes and detail changes. Ultimately, the proposal was approved on May 14th, 2012, mailed on May 24th, and we are here today because it was appealed by the Northwest District Association on June 7th, 2012. The proposal, as approved, the applicant will have a little more detail, but just basically, as I mentioned, there are two buildings involved, Building A and Building B, for lack of a better term. Building A is the larger project. It's on the lower left. It's 5 floors, 86 dwelling units, and 66 below-grade parking stalls. Building B does not have below-grade parking, but it does have 5 floors and 48 dwelling units. Appeal summary, which will obviously be followed up by the appellant, was appealed by the Northwest District Association and essentially stated the Landmarks Commission, acting in consideration and advice of city staff, construed staff's interpretation of 33445, which is our historic district chapter, and other code sections as to exclude consideration of certain street trees, specifically for mature elms. Additionally, they fail to consider the contribution made by street trees in the fabric and context of the district as characterized by the community design guidelines and the Alphabet Historic District Community Design Guidelines addendum. Moving along, the aerial of the site here again, in this case, north is oriented down. The two sites are dotted. The larger site, as I mentioned, which was Building A, and the arrows indicate the four large mature elm trees. These are additional views of the site. If you haven't had an opportunity to go, they are significant trees in the district and on this site. The existing building that's noted next to these trees, a 1950s non-contributing structure, would obviously be demolished for the new development to occur. So relative to staff's response to the appeal, we looked at the zoning code very specifically. And in our first section, 33.10, it has a clarification as to when the zoning code applies to the right-of-way. Typically, land within public right-of-ways is regulated by Title 17, public improvements, not by Title 33, except in the following situations. All five of these situations do not apply to this site. And I neglected to mention, the memo you also have before you articulates essentially this PowerPoint as well. Moving further into the code, where 33445, our development and alteration section for historic districts, we have triggers as to when historic design review is triggered in a historic district. And several items are triggered, of course. We have a building of a new structure. That is why we're building the new development. That's item A2. Four was an item in terms of our reference as to the street trees themselves and their removal to allow the new development are considered standards in the right-of-way, along with streetlights, furniture, planters, public art, the sidewalk itself, the asphalt of the street. The applicant was proposing to replace all the trees in kind, new trees with a new development proposal. Relative to the community design guidelines and the historic Alphabet District addendum, the approval criteria was not triggered as a result of the two aforementioned code sections. And this was demonstrated and is further outlined in this memo, and it is also why we're including it as a part of the record today. We neglected to be as thorough in the original staff decision. This can perhaps be clarified further by noting that the application to cut down trees submitted independently of this development proposal will be processed under the jurisdiction of Urban Forestry Commission, the City Forester, and the Bureau of Transportation, not by the Historic Landmarks Commission. To that effect, I would mention that Kirk Kruger from Bureau of Transportation is here, as well as Jen Cairo. I'll hear about it. Jen Cairo is here from Parks and can speak to that effect as well. So essentially, options for development of this site, BDS staff felt were threefold, A, B, and C. A, required that the street trees be preserved, denied demolition of the non-contributing building on the site because the work would impact the roots and kill the trees. We heard testimony at the Landmarks Commission hearing from an arborist report as well as the city forester that development on this site would be catastrophic for the survival of these trees by nature of their root zone and by nature of their canopy being a large portion of their canopy being removed. B, require the street trees to be preserved but allow the lot to be redeveloped. This would result in the trees becoming hazardous due to extensive loss of roots and crown, and would also cause them to die. C, allow removal of the street trees and the redevelopment of the site and require the appropriate mitigation from the developer. This seems to be the only practical solution for this site, and it mirrors the considered decision of the Historic Landmarks Commission. So conclusions before you today, effectively would be to, one, deny the appeal and uphold the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission approval. The project would be approved as is. Please note, however, per recommendation of the city attorney, council should also make a tentative decision, if this was their choice, to allow inclusion of additional interpretation language, as I've read to you and submitted to you via the memo today, before a final decision is adopted. Secondly, uphold the appeal and require additional findings to be included in the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission approval. This would require return for adoption at second hearing. I know that we will hear from the Northwest District Association on this matter. And lastly, potentially, request design changes and or additional conditions of approval. This could also require a return. So that is the end of my presentation. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
I received a memo from the council clerk with a proposed settlement. Do you know anything about that?
And I haven't laid my eyes thoroughly on that document.
Okay, so we'll hear more about that later.
I anxiously await more myself.
I have a question. With respect to the argument that 33.445.320 somehow includes trees within the scope of the Historic Design Commission's review. There's no precedent for that, is that correct?
Not that I'm aware of. I think it's been our policy to handle the street trees, like sidewalks, like curb edges, like other standards that occur within the right-of-way are, in fact, part of the standard set of improvements.
So as I understand the appellant, one of their arguments is there's an ambiguity here, and I'm going to give them a chance to discuss that. But as you read the statute, is there an ambiguity that you believe exists in the statute with respect to street trees in the right-of-way?
Commissioner, it's a good question. I mean, it's funny when things like this put a spotlight on code language and you read it a different way because someone asked the question a different way. As policy, we've never thought that the omission of the word city forester or city engineer in this case, or that street tree wasn't specifically included, meant that they weren't part of those standards. And so therefore, we go back into other areas of the code where there are triggers. One area that I didn't illuminate on in my presentation was we did have very specific tree design review triggers in the South Auditorium Plan District. And we have recently cleaned that up, for lack of a better term, as a part of the tree code project for Title 11. And that is something where trees are very specifically mentioned as triggering review, not necessarily in this historic district. So when we went back to the original section of 33.010 and looked at what triggered, when does 33 go into the right-of-way, it reads very clearly. It is the first post-shade area on the face page of your memo where it talks about rights of way in the greenway, environmental or scenic overlay, the act of dedicating public rights of way through a land division. This is not a land division, but a part of land divisions, we create streets, and that is when 33 could apply. Development within design districts specified in 33.420. This is not a design district. This is a historic district. And then, furthermore, structures that project from private property over right-of-way, such as oreo windows, that's not the case. And then lastly, proposals for park and ride. From a structural context of this code, we felt like it did not apply. Nevertheless, at the Landmarks Commission hearing, they were discussed. An arborist report was submitted, and commission did hear from the city forester relative to the impacts of what these trees were and what would happen and what the city forester's position was.
So is it fair to say it's the position of the Bureau of Development Services that for this appeal to be successful, the council would first have to make a legislative change and change the law to provide for jurisdiction by this body?
Correct. And I would go one further and say is we are in the beginning of a process that did not necessarily target street trees, and that's a historic resource code improvement project, which is a streamlining effort taken on part of my Commissioner Salzman, as well as the mayor, to work with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and BDS to craft sharper, faster code language for historic reviews. And a lot of that had to do with the Irvington Historic District.
And one last question. The council, and particularly, I guess, Commissioner Saltzman and my bureau, Parks Bureau, just completed an exhaustive process of updating the tree code. And is there anything that you're aware of in that? I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to give you a chance to testify.
Sweet.
Is there anything that we did through the tree code update that specifically that the appellate could cite to as indicating council intent for historic review of a decision like this?
If I understand the question correctly,
did we change the law in the tree code in any way that would be relevant to this appeal?
No, it didn't, and I'll go on further as to why it actually further clarified this position. One of the issues that came up in the discussion of Title 11 and the tree code was Ladd's Edition trees and the Norway maples relative to them being a nuisance species. If there is one historic district in the city of Portland that talks about street trees, it's Ladd's Edition. It has a street tree plan. It has specific trees designed for specific boulevards. And unfortunately, for the invasive Norway maple, it was one of them. We went so far as to correct the record relative to eliminating those as a required tree. And that power and authority was given, as we, again, we read the code today, to the city forester to implement.
So I just think it's worth noting that, and we've looked at the tree code too, and we don't find any, I'll ask the appellant, but we don't see anything in that exhaustive mm-hmm. work product that would shed a light on this. I'm dumb, but since you mentioned Norway maples, which are a nuisance tree, I just want to point out that we have learned that the State Street maple is virtually indistinguishable from the Norway maple, and as the city forester will tell you, even Mother Nature can't tell the difference.
Well, if I might follow up.
You're going to have a battle of the tree types?
No.
Okay. No, it's actually good news. There's a State Street maple that is virtually indistinguishable from the Norway maple and is not on our nuisance list. So.
Booyah. I think that
booyah,
highlights.
I like that.
I think that highlights.
The choice of the word booyah.
That highlights my last and final point. Thanks for your time. In the issue of working through street trees in Ladd's Edition, and faced with the reality of an invasive species, we work very closely with the city forester, meaning the Landmarks Commission and BDS staff, to come up with alternates so that the integrity of that very distinct and repetitive canopy that occurs up that boulevard of Norway maples could be maintained, because effectively it was the look and the appearance that mattered. And so what I would offer potentially as a solution, and it may only be a friendly amendment, is to you, Commissioner Fish, to encourage the city forester to work closely with Landmarks Commission, maybe on an advisory capacity, when another development of this type occurs. And I think it will probably occur again in Alphabet Historic District, because it is one of our historic districts that has the higher density zoning, which will more than likely impact the older trees. Some of our smaller or even larger residential districts, Irvington, for instance, has single-family zoning. Very rarely will we get a development proposal that will impact street trees.
Thank you.
Not that it doesn't occur.
Thank you.
I have a couple questions. So just to follow up, so how is it that the street trees in Ladd's Edition are included in historic review? Was that something council did or the federal government?
They're not included in the review, but they were included as a part of the street plan, as a part of the Ladd's Edition historic design guidelines. And for reference, it is a document used by the city forester to replant and maintain those trees.
So is there anything that prevents the Alphabet District from getting a similar type of a plan for street trees?
Not necessarily. I mean, BDS is open to this. Obviously, street trees matter, and they particularly matter in historic districts. And when they're elder trees, their removal will be noticed. However, we do have a conflict with the higher density zoning and what's buildable, particularly on this type of lot, where anything built to the development capacity of the site will be detrimental to these older trees and their root zones and their canopies.
And how is it that design review districts, I guess the Design Review Commission does have jurisdiction over street trees? I think that's what you said.
In certain instances, and in that reference, we did have, and we've since corrected, the South Auditorium District.
Oh,
and
so it was only in South Auditorium that occurred.
I'd have to double check. Don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure. And in that process, and when we were dealing with that, we faced the conundrum of not being foresters ourselves, the Design Commission not being made of anyone on the Forestry Commission, with that dilemma of advising on something where it was not our expertise. And Title 11 dealt with that.
So in Gateway, which a newer design review district. Mm-hmm. So in other words, the Design Review Commission does not have jurisdiction over issues around street trees.
Correct, because we've read street trees to be standard improvements in the right of way. One, if someone wanted to take down street trees and not replace any of them, that would be a non-standard. Mm-hmm. That would be not in normal spacing type, and potentially would trigger a review. We just haven't had that instance.
And so you said at Landmarks for this project there was it the urban forester or was it, there was another arborist also?
The applicant hired an arborist to evaluate what would happen to these trees with this new development. And that was presented at the request of the Landmarks Commission because they did want to talk about these trees. Mm-hmm. We did talk about these trees. And then as far as the city forester came and presented their concerns relative to what this development would do to the street tree canopy itself, because they do hang over the site, and also to their root zone, because they have grown in and around a structure that's set back further and shorter in height.
So was the city forester in more or less agreement then with the arborist?
As a result of the development, correct.
No doubt about it, the development would destroy the trees.
Right, and part of why I walked through the history of this site back to 2000, and if I get my dates correct, back to the original pre-application conference on August 2011, mm-hmm. we advised this applicant that these street trees could be removed provided they were replaced. And I'm sure they'll discuss the substantial replacement trees above and beyond the minimum required that will go in their locations as replacements.
Okay, thanks.
Others? All right, thanks, sir. We'll now hear from the appellant.
Yeah.
And you will have 10 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. My name is John Bradley. I reside at 2350 Northwest Johnson. I'm here today on behalf of the NWDA and its Planning Committee. The appeal before you today is unusual in that it is not adversarial. And we would like to thank the developer Sam Rodriguez for his patience and his willingness to work with us on this matter. This appeal is also not about the building per se, which is below the allowable base zone height, but rather it is about four historically significant, gracious, 100-year-old elms located in a historic district, and whether the instructions given by staff to the Historic Landmarks Commission ignore in their deliberation these historic trees is policy or a misinterpretation caused by the complexity of the code. We hope you will support our settlement with Sam and give us guidance as to how important old trees are in establishing the character of the built environment, especially in historic districts.
Good afternoon. I'm Tavo Cruz, and I'm appearing as a member of the Planning Committee of the Northwest District Association. There's a great deal of neighborhood interest in the elm trees at the subject property. These trees add to the fabric of our historic district, and they represent living links to an important era in our neighborhood. For me personally, they've provided shade and a unique canopy for decades as I have walked home from downtown Portland. The NWDA appealed the Historic Landmarks Commission decision to approve the project based on what we consider to be an incorrect reading of the Portland Zoning Code. We provided a memo to City Council which outlines our legal analysis, and I would summarize it as follows. First, the jurisdictional statute for considering the development in a historic district was incorrectly construed. The staff's interpretation allowed landmarks to pick and choose among aspects of a project that should be considered in its entirety. Second, various terms in the code are undefined or ambiguous, such as improvement and landscaping. Thirdly, the staff's alternative argument, which was raised after the fact, does not apply. Fourth, the Community Design Guidelines and Historic Alphabet District Community Design Guidelines Addendum support consideration of street trees. And finally, there's precedent for landmarks to consider street trees, and we have documentation that it has done so as recently as 2008. While pursuing this appeal, we have continued to work with the developer, Mill Creek Residential Trust, to reach a settlement of this matter. As a neighborhood association, we have different interests from Mill Creek, and they may not support every aspect of our legal analysis, but we both support the proposed settlement, and we share a common goal: to obtain greater clarity and certainty in the zoning code regarding street trees in a historic district. We want to emphasize that even though this could have been a very adversarial situation, Sam Rodriguez has been an excellent partner with the neighborhood during this process. We are pleased that we were able to work with Mill Creek to develop a settlement in the form of the proposed findings and approval conditions that you have before you now. The proposed findings take a very narrow and practical approach to this problem. Namely, existing street trees should be considered by landmarks when reviewing applications for new structures in a historic district. And this interpretation should be incorporated in the city's new Title 11 regarding trees in Portland. Also, we ask that you adopt the proposed conditions of approval, which are designed to mitigate the effects of construction on the elm trees. Mill Creek and their council can address these items in more detail, but we want to emphasize that these conditions have been tailored specifically for this project with input from arborists and construction experts. We ask that they be approved without alteration by City Council. Thank you for your time and consideration of this matter.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. My name is Frank Dixon. I'm here solely as a part of the Neighborhood Association today. Taking the ambiguity issue, we would hope Council would consider clarifying the ambiguity today and working on a legislative or other kind of correction down the road, as we heard was possible from Mr. Heron. The exception that we see that staff is relying on here references the design overlay chapter, not specifically design review. And when you get back into the chapter on design overlay zones, which is the exception that allows you to consider both Chapter 33 and Chapter 17, you come up with a specific reference to historic design review in 33.420.045. And that is a list of exemptions from ordinary design review. But the only exemption there that deals with a broad category is Section A, which deals with historic design review, which instructs the reader to substitute historic design review for the design overlay review chapter. So if effectively lawyers might call that as incorporating by reference the historic design review. And once more, when you think about the logic of treating design review and historic design review differently, it really makes no sense. Historic design review is a more stringent review, and if anything, there's a clumsy attempt in terms of the writing of Chapter 33.420 to include this instruction to substitute under a subsection that talks about exemptions, which also includes specific repairs and maintenance to materials or skylights, very specific items that need to be accepted. So from a statutory or code interpretation standpoint, there definitely is ambiguity, and there's definitely room for counsel to say, yes, that historic design review is within the type of review that you consider both Chapter 17 and Chapter 33. Now, going back to the piece that really was before the Landmarks Commission, when the staff pointed out that non-standard improvements in the public right-of-way aren't within their purview, that piece, which is also consistent with the fact that the Historic Landmark Commission didn't have really a good opportunity to balance these existing street trees with the design of the building as they were doing their historic design review. The word improvements is a word that actually is defined in the charter. And I only have one copy, and I'll give it to the clerk, but in section 9.401, it actually defines improve or improvement. And it includes construction, reconstruction, grading, regrading, paving, repaving, surfacing, a number of items. But it does not, when you talk about improvements, even in the Black's Law Dictionary citation that is cited in your memo or in the charter definition, we're talking about a park bench or a sewer line, and we're not talking about a standing, existing 125-year-old or 100-year-old elm tree. So that is consistent, and you'll hear some testimony about this, and I think there's something cited in the memo, too, about decisions where the Historic Landmarks Commission years back considered street trees within their purview in terms of balancing how you're going to build and site in the historic alphabet district or in any historic district in the city as it relates to the standing street trees. If you follow the interpretation of staff to its logical conclusion, every historic street tree in an historic zone in the city, except for heritage trees that are specifically treated differently, have no bearing in terms of the construction on a particular site in a historic district. And what that does is put every one of these street trees at risk. And that's essentially why we're here today. So we have fashioned a reasonable outcome in terms with the developer so as to not tie up his particular project here, but we're going to be back again and again in the same situation unless this is clarified. Thank you.
Commissioner Fish? Well, first of all, let me just say that I want to compliment all three of you and NWDA for the quality of your presentation and the submission. I mean, and the thoughtfulness of it. And we have to grapple with this issue. So I have a few questions. I'm going to go a little deeper, and you only had 10 minutes, so this is a chance to elaborate beyond what you would. I want to start with Mr. Bradley. You said that in your remarks that you wanted us to, in effect, bless a settlement you had reached with the developer.
Yes.
So let's just assume for a moment that the council disagrees with your interpretation of the code. One of the questions that we're going to have to discuss and grapple with. But let's say we disagree with your interpretation of the code, conclude that it's not ambiguous and that the appeal should be denied. What would prevent you in that instance from negotiating with the developer independent of some finding by this body?
Nothing. But part of the reason for our appeal, as voted on by the board, was that not only was this to deal with the specifics of this project, but to look more generally at street-wide historic trees. So to answer your question, we would probably go ahead and hopefully continue on with the private settlement and development.
And that, so I just want to be clear about that. I mean, I understand the proposed settlement deals with the building, the protection of the trees, and then you've also incorporated some clarification about the code and how we might deal with these issues in the future. But if we disagree with your interpretation, it would not prevent you from negotiating with the developer.
That is correct.
But wouldn't it then, if I might just follow up on that question, the proposed settlement has a change in the building. So you're asking us to approve that as part of this decision?
Yes, we are. But it's not the building per se. So you're not doing anything to the decision of the Historic Commission, because all they're doing is they have very graciously said that they will pull back the garage underground and lose some parking places to give the trees a bigger root zone and to prevent,
That wasn't part of the specified in the land use reviews?
The land use review is silent concerning trees.
No, it's regarding the number of underground parking spaces and the...
No, none are required by code in this area.
So I'd like clarification from staff on that. Not now, but later, just to make sure that if the line of questioning that Commissioner Fish is pursuing is what council adopts, you could, in fact, negotiate with developer without changing the land use decision.
I understand.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
And you have to go?
I unfortunately have a previous engagement for this on city business, which I have to leave for. I do apologize to the community and everybody here that I can't stay. I will, of course, review the tape of the proceedings and weigh in when this matter comes back to council. I apologize.
Thank you.
And I would like to say for the record that I'm very intrigued by the settlement, and I appreciate the good work that all sides put in to coming up with that document. I'm really frustrated that I can't stay to discuss it. However, as I said, it is city business that I'm leading on. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, following up, Mr. Bradley, if I understand your argument about our code is ambiguous and you would ask us to interpret it a certain way and then at some future date provide greater clarity, does that mean, in effect, that we're going to have the final say on this? In other words, are you going to live and die on whatever the council does, or is it your intention, if you get an adverse ruling, to take this to another authority?
I think in this specific case, if you're asking me, are we, as you know, first of all, we haven't discussed that, but I would say that we're kind of living and dying here. If you're asking, are we going to be
appealed? I'm not asking you to waive your right. I'm just trying to understand.
But I really, are we appealing this to LUBA? Is that what you're asking? And I can't answer that right now. I would probably say no. I don't think we are. But I really think this is an important matter that really has to be dealt with here, because if you say, if you just sign off on the findings and concerning our specific private agreement and remain silent about the policy of the trees, what are we to do as a neighborhood association? And my suggestion is that when people come in with a similar project, I will have to sit back and say, look, we went through a very similar project before where trees were specifically not considered. I don't know how we want to react to that.
No, I understand. I think you raised some intriguing issues and probably have to hire two or three more urban foresters to actually adapt to the new procedure that you're proposing, because it's not a modest change in how we deal with this. And if trees are covered, and you argue they are, it does pretty fundamentally change the way we look at trees and make these decisions. But I mean, that's a consequence of your argument. Let me go to Frank for a second. Frank, you focused us on the language of non-standard improvements, and you focused a lot on improvements. When Tim testified before us, he drew a distinction between standard and non-standard, and he felt that that was the key distinction, and that he felt, I think, I don't want to mischaracterize his argument, but I think what he was saying was, this is a standard, this is not a non-standard improvement here, this is something that the that the code covers about replacing an older tree and mitigating and putting in a new tree, and therefore it would be exempt from this altogether because it's a standard, not a non-standard improvement. So that's how he reads it. That would, it seems to me, take that issue out of the case. You focused on the question of improvements. Why do you disagree with BDS's interpretation? What's the basis of your disagreement with BDS on that?
Well, Commissioner, what you're asking is if B does not apply, then what happens? In other words, if B doesn't exempt.
It says the following are subject to design review, and it says non-standard improvements. And Tim's presentation to us is, in any event, this is a standard improvement. This wouldn't even qualify as a non-standard, so you don't have to read further and ask what's included or excluded. He takes it out altogether by saying this is a standard improvement and it's historically been treated. Issues have been treated as standard improvements, so it doesn't apply. And I'm just giving you a chance to respond to that, because if we agree with him, then this statute doesn't apply.
Okay. What I'm looking at is actually Section B, which exempts historic design review non-standard improvements.
No, actually it says the following proposals are subject to, and it then goes on to say non-standard improvements. So standard improvements would be exempt.
If it's okay with Commissioner, will you give me a chance to think about that, and I'll respond to it in my rebuttal.
Since you were focusing on that thing, I wanted to give you a chance, because it seems to me a pretty fundamental disagreement, and if Tim's right, and this is otherwise a standard improvement, then by the terms of the statute, it would not be subject to design review. And we wouldn't have to then ask why weren't trees included or why were they excluded from the description that follows. So I'll give you a chance in rebuttal. I'm interested in having.
Yeah, that's fair. Thank you.
One last question, just from me. With the exception of the tree issue, are there any other land use issues which are currently on appeal or that you contemplate on appealing relative to this development, or is this the last issue in dispute?
This is the last issue in dispute formally for the NWDA right now.
Doesn't preclude a private citizen or some other person from filing a claim. But in terms of the three of you, this is the remaining issue.
This is the remaining issue. And we really did look for a way to come to some sort of understanding concerning the street trees from a policy perspective. But, you know, barring this appeal, there was no other way to get this before council. So
thank you.
Well, I guess a couple questions. So the first condition, or your first part of the compromise, talks about incorporating this interpretation for the alphabet district only? Or is it saying that the city council will then also incorporate this interpretation into citywide tree policy review? So are you asking for an interpretation that landmarks can protect or, you know, speak to street trees only in the alphabet district? Is that?
I really think we were looking for some interpretation for all historic districts, because there are large, you know, as has been brought up already, there are a large number of historic districts that have really significant street trees and that really do establish the fabric of those historic districts. Mm-hmm.
In our proposed finding, we actually say that. We say that we're looking to incorporate this interpretation of the citywide tree policy.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I just wasn't sure whether I meant alphabet district tree policy. But okay. And so is this, I mean, I want to ask, you know, we spent a lot of time on adopting a new tree code. Is this in any way, and maybe you're not the ones to answer this question, I can ask staff or whomever, is this trying to get a bite at the apple that something council chose not to do in adopting tree code?
If you're asking if Title 11 were in,
is this an issue that was fought and lost in our adoption of the tree code?
I don't believe so. And when I read title, when I read Title 11, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm not sure that this issue is covered in there, to be quite honest. But then I defer to lawyers on that.
Okay. I'm a lawyer. I haven't read it. but from what I understand, this issue is not covered. And the two, we weren't looking to fix any hole that maybe had been open there. So.
Thanks.
All right. We'll now hear from the supporters of the appeal.
We have 8 people signed up. The first 4, please come on up, are Terry Parker, Bill Harris, Dan Volker, and Miriam Allow.
All right, who'd like to begin? Mr. Parker.
Thank you. I'm Terry Parker. I live in Northeast Portland. It is important for people from various Portland neighborhoods to support the quality of life outside their own neighborhood when planning occurs that would negatively affect that quality of life for existing residents. I was asked by somebody from the Northwest District Association to be here today in support, which I am. There is a total lack of concern for existing conditions. Ripping out 4-century-old elm trees will tear at the fabric of this historical neighborhood. It is my understanding these trees were likely planted by one of Portland's iconic historical families. It is also my understanding the Historical Landmarks Commission, acting on possible misguided advice from city staff, construed codes in such a manner as to exclude these trees from consideration as it applies to community design guidelines in the Alphabet District. In doing so, there was a failure to consider the contribution these trees make to the historical composition of the district. Moreover, it is my understanding this scenario will arise again and again in the future because the Portland Plan is deficient as it applies to historical significance and preservation of historical structures and resources. An improvement to replace a historical canopy with a tree that will take years to replace the actual dimensions of that canopy, that existing canopy, is that an actual improvement? In closing, as a fourth generation Portlander, I am actually here for a dual purpose. First and primarily to support the Northwest District Association in their appeal. And secondly, for the purpose of alerting the council, there is an unmet need to include a greater emphasis on historical preservation, not only in the Portland Plan, but also an essential, highly important need to add strong historical protections within the comprehensive plan, and this includes trees. World-class cities have protected their historical heritage not just for decades, but through centuries. Portland is a relatively young city as compared to cities worldwide. There's an immense need to do a better job of protecting the city's evaporating historical heritage, starting right now with this appeal. Thank you.
So you support the appeal?
That's why I'm here, yes.
This is a first.
Let the record note.
That people shouldn't just be able to do what they want with trees that they own.
Well, they shouldn't be allowed to cut down these great, big, huge trees that add benefit to the neighborhood. And that's what we're talking about today. They add benefit to the neighborhood. It'll be years before any replacement trees add benefit to the neighborhood.
The collective and common good outweighs the individual rights of property owners here.
We're not asking them to, how do I say this? We're not asking them to tear something out. We're asking them to leave something there. There's a difference.
I look forward to your email explaining in more detail the difference, Mr. Parker. Hi, welcome.
I'm Bill Harris. I have lived at 2803 Northwest Cumberland Road for the last 40 years. And I speak not from an especially technical point of view with regard to the specific regulations and laws and customs, but to do 2 things. I think in this circumstance, if it is required of the council that you do something that doesn't absolutely fit the details of the regulations and customs, that you do so on the basis of the fact that you're elected officials, and therefore empowered with discretion as long as you have visible accountability. The agreement that was presented in the appeal seems to me to be a practical way to approach this circumstance in which we've made the mistake of getting here without regulations that apply well. Regulations that apply well seem to me would involve the fact that there is no taking. Rather, when one owns a piece of property, you own it when you plant a tree. You own it if it has a tree on it when you arrive, and you recognize your obligation as the owner of that plot and therefore the residence of the tree to be responsible for its contribution to the common good as trees change.
May I just clarify something, sir?
Yes.
Because we get hit on this all the time. I just want to just reassure you that the tree actually belongs to you. The property owner does not own the tree. It is in a right-of-way, and you are the owner. The tree, however, is the property owner's responsibility to maintain. And that gets lost when we get dinged for having regulations on the books, and we get told by property rights people that we're infringing on people's rights. The tree is in the public right-of-way. It belongs to you. Title 11 currently regulates when you can and can't replace trees and the regulation of trees, but it does not belong to the property owner unless it's on the property owner's footprint.
Well, in this case, it's planted on the right-of-way, and its roots enter a much larger area than that.
I understand, but it still is you and the public own that tree, not
okay.
The property owner.
I recognize that when I tried to replant the street strip in front of my house, that I had to had to comply with community standard and community desire. To continue, there is then an accountability of an owner for being a vigorous part or a responsible part of the community of which they within which they exist. And I do hope that the council will proceed with the frustrating effort of making regulations that make this kind of situation highly unlikely of happening again. Thank you.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Dan Volkmer, and I brought a copy of a that the clerk, thank you, is going to give to you. What you have before you now is a panorama of the Alphabet District and how it looked in 1888. But before I talk about that, I just want to say, as a former Landmarks Commissioner for 8 years during Mayor Katz's term, we discussed street trees a number of times. And when I heard that this particular application, the Landmarks Commission was told not, it wasn't in their purview, I was very surprised. And even a current board member, Harris Monterazzo, asked that edict of not to discuss trees be put in the record. And I called some of my former colleagues on the commission and said, didn't we discuss street trees? And they all said yes and came up with examples. So the precedent is set for Landmarks Commission to discuss and evaluate street trees and how they contribute.
But I just want to make sure I heard you. So you're saying the Landmarks Commission in the past did?
Yes, sir.
Consider street trees?
Yes, we did.
Okay. So basically, nobody challenged that.
No.
Okay.
And their consideration, Dan, there's examples and where it was they made specific rulings about what you could or couldn't do with trees? Because, I mean,
the street trees were evaluated by Landmarks Commissioners in terms of how they contributed to the historic character of a neighborhood, which is what I asked that this current Landmarks Commission be allowed to discuss, and they were not. That was not discussed. When the city talks about these trees being discussed, they were discussed in terms of an arborist saying, yes, if you build a building here, these trees will die. There was no discussion about how they contribute or evaluating their measure in terms of contributing to a district. So in that panorama of 1888, as you can see, commissioners, the vast network of street trees that once lined all these streets that these four surviving elms represent grounds the historic Alphabet District to its very beginnings. Architect Richard Marlett published 19th Street, a photographic and pictorial display of what this neighborhood looked like in 1888, which was around the time these four elms were planted. The panorama reprinted from West Shore Magazine in the early photos shows street trees up and down every street. This was the Alphabet neighborhood. So